Seven seasons down and one to go, but we're here to talk about season 7. We are the AfterBuzz TV Voltron Legendary Defender After Show. This is our full season recap. We have all sorts of fun stuff to talk about tonight, you guys, and two very special guests to join us. So stick with us after the opening, and team, it's time to form Voltron.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
I've been thinking this all day in terms of this season. Where do we go from here?
If there's one band that can, like, make an immediate beeline straight to my heart, it's Imagine Dragons.
It's Imagine Dragons. It's been Imagine Dragons for years.
Yep.
And this song in particular. But yeah, welcome back. Welcome to the end of season 7. We are the AfterBuzz TV Voltron Legendary Defender After Show. I have, of course, with me the wonderful Green Lion, Megan Salinas.
Hey, guys.
I am Black Lion Katie Cullen, and we have two very, very special guests joining us once again. We have showrunners Lauren Montgomery and Joaquim Dos Santos.
Woo!
Hey, how's it going? We're at the desk.
You are at the desk. Welcome to the table.
So yes. Yeah, how does it feel to be up here as opposed to on the couch?
It's new and it's fancy. I've long been jealous of the table seating, so I'm really excited to be up here.
No fiddling with the attached mic.
Yeah.
There.
That?
Yeah.
I also noticed that I was like super slouched on the couch.
Yeah, I never knew what to do with my hands. I suffer from like a lack of understanding of where do the hands go on the couch.
And
but
you
with
just
the table,
put them on the
I
table.
Know exactly where they go.
Yeah.
Right here.
Though the payoff is the seat's not quite as comfy.
Oh.
That couch is nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having us back.
Absolutely.
We're excited to talk about the season.
And we have so much to talk about, but before we get it started on that, we have a little bit of housekeeping, as usual. Of course, because this is the season recap, we're dropping the spoiler warning, so have fun, be nuts, have a good time. However, we are keeping the polite or get out rule, and we're going to keep that just throughout the rest of the show whenever season 8 occurs. That basically... We say this every time, but if there's anyone new in the chat, we're going to say it again. Your opinions are valid. Your reactions are valid. I firmly believe that you can express them in a polite manner. And if you are unable to do that, you will be banned from the channel. And that's the whole animation channel. That's not just our show. So,
forever.
So we've got an eye on the chat. We've got an eye on the hashtag. It's going to be one of those nights, y'all. ABTV Voltron on Twitter. Be nice. Have fun. Let's get rolling. What did you guys think of this season? This was very, very different from everything that's come before it. Like, what went into that?
I mean, I think tonally we knew we wanted to do, you know, kind of a big shift. You know, the Earth campaign in general had, I don't know, would you say like a heavier sense to it?
Yeah, for sure. I think you can probably see through the run of the show that things started pretty light up mm-hmm. front with these kind of kids going on a space adventure. And then LOTOR came in and took it up a notch. And we always knew once Earth kind of came into the picture that things were going to get even a little more serious. So we knew the energy was going to shift. It was just...
We were excited. I mean, we can say we were super excited. Yeah. We're huge fans of, anime of this genre. Macross and Robotech being sort of chief amongst them. So this was our mm-hmm. sort of... Chef Kiss homage.
Yeah.
Like,
trying to will Macross into the show.
Well, Megan pointed it out when we were first watching it that shift to going back on Earth felt a lot more like a Gundam anime
yeah.
is mm-hmm. our frame of reference because mm-hmm. we grew up in the era of Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
Where it was yes. all very plot heavy, very strategic, very a lot of action on the ground and not necessarily as many giant robot battles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was amazing.
Right on.
Thanks, yeah. It was a huge thing. I just remember that big, like, arc at the end of just every lion having to, like, go towards the Zyforge cannons mm-hmm. and all the bases. And it was, like, I remember trying to figure that out over multiple episodes and the writers just having this whole plan and just thinking, like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the
this
logistics
is so intense.
Of...
We're going to be dead after this. It's going to be so much work. But you know, despite like how fried our brains were at the end, like I think we were really happy with how all that stuff turned out.
Yeah, and I think we're in the same spot that you guys are. Like those types of stories, those Earth campaigns, those very sort of grounded campaigns, it represented a shift, but it represented a shift for us that we really wanted to lean into because we love those stories as well.
Sorry. Was that the plan from the very beginning? Because fans of the original Voltron may recall that Earth was decimated in like the first 2 minutes of the show.
You called that like three seasons ago,
That's super heavy.
You've been leaning on that for a while, in much the same way I've been on the Shiro's been dead the whole time train forever. This was a season of vindication for us in all of the worst possible ways.
It wasn't specifically that from the beginning. Like, there was actually a very different pitch for where the show started.
Yeah.
Where we original pitch was that, like, it was a post-apocalyptic Earth.
Oh, man.
That's where the show started.
Yeah. And, and it was already invaded by the Gaara. But it was starting a little too dark. And that was one of those notes that DreamWorks made that we were like, you know, this is the correct note. We need to start it a little lighter so that when it gets to that place, like, it feels real. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just kind of in, like, sad times the whole time.
We were crazy because we were like, Keith has to, like, regularly, like, shave his teeth down
or
to, like
there was something like it was specifically like,
he was like
about him being gone.
Dyeing his hair or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or
we had a lot of like crazy ideas.
We were going nuts.
There was I'm gonna get real here. Like Lance was an orphan. Like he was a child soldier. We were coming off of Korra, which like had gone to some dark places.
Yeah.
And
we
were still in like dark place mindset. We hadn't quite reset to like colorful lions mindset.
Yeah.
And DreamWorks was just kinda like, reel it back, guys.
Our exec was like, why don't we not do that? We were like, all right, I guess we'll not do that. It's weird.
So you really were writing a Gundam anime.
Yeah.
But we got it back there. We just had to kind of, you know, start at a happier place. And they were like, and as soon as they're like, great, we really like where this is at, guys. And we're like, okay. And they turned their backs and we're like, dark.
But they pitched us the Earth stuff. They were like, when does Earth come into the fold? And we were like, let me tell you about Earth, guys.
But again, we hadn't fully settled on like whether they were coming to Earth or Earth was coming to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there was a real interest in having them return to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was where we went with it. But we knew like it, you know, it needed to be like a pretty big event.
Yeah. And the smaller, you know, it's not an intergalactic crazy takeover empire. You know, it's a smaller thing by comparison, but the stakes are heavier because you feel so tied to these characters at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've officially broken chat. And I love there's 150 people in chat going, oh my God. And also they all say hello and they love you and thank you for this season.
Aww.
Like they found out it was you guys, it was message after message of, oh yeah, oh it's these guys. We love this season. It was so great. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Tavern of Lions. You are a wonderful place to be. That's what the chat has been calling themselves all season.
Oh, wow.
Because
I like
we say, I love everyone in this bar enough that they built a bar.
Nice.
So,
I feel like that might be the name of the tavern in the Dungeons & Dragons.
There you go.
Tavern of Lions. There we go.
Yeah. We just made it canon.
Congratulations, guys. We're canon. And everything that entails. Anyway, piggybacking off of the Earth plot, how long did you know that Sendak was going to be the antagonist for that arc?
You know, not very long.
Not very long. We sort of struggled with like, oh, what are we going to do here, guys?
Well, yeah, it was funny because we shot him off.
He got yeeted into space and then
he got Wrath of Khan. Yeah,
we kept joking that he was like on a planet like kicking back and like drinking Mai Tais or something.
Whittling.
Yeah.
You know, funny side note was that like originally, real early in the series, we had like a clone storyline for Sendak.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, and that was kind of where some of the Shiro clone came.
Yeah, he like, kind of evolved from the Sendak story.
Like, he was like, there was this whole thing where Sendak had failed in the Castle of Lions, and then Zarkon had sent out like an assassin, and he was gonna take out Sendak, and then he returns back to Zarkon, and the real is he's Sendak, and so it's
you
like
realize
the next,
it was this
he
repeating
been
pattern.
By his own
clone. Yeah,
it was like a what is that shooter? What, not shooter. What is the freaking
looper?
Looper.
Yeah.
I was in it. That's all I knew. But yeah, kind of like
there was
that.
A shooter too. I think it was a marking.
That was one. Yeah. It's a completely different.
Yeah. I remember.
Different concept, different movie. But that kind of like went away. And
but
so
it,
then
it,
we
it
was
an interesting
so
thing though, because it was like each one was it like each Sendak would learn a little bit more and eventually become this sort of rebel that would fight against Zarkon. So every it was like every 10th generation Sendaks would rise up and then fighting in Zarkon, they'd have to like start over.
So
or
like
something.
The anti-Connor from Cyberlife. This is amazing.
But yeah, we went so long. Like he was gone, kind of shot out into space for so long that at some point, when the Shiro clone storyline came into it, we brought Sendak back, and then the writers were like, "Oh, let's bring the clone thing back," and we're like, "Oh no, now it feels like we kind of made it up just to justify the Shiro thing," so we ended up just dropping it completely. So Sendak was not a clone; he was just a dude now.
But it also made for good stuff for like getting Zethrid, Ezor, and Aksha sort of teamed up with Hagar. You know, it sort of lent itself to all that.
Yeah, she needed someone to bring back, and it was like, well, who was our big bad that got kind of sent off on his break? We also wanted to kind of see what he was up to, but. Whenever we'd try to do like an episode that centered on someone who wasn't the Paladins, it wasn't always like well accepted.
Yeah,
and so I think we were like, what if we do a episode of like what's Sendak been up to this whole time, and then how the generals find him?
Right,
and it was just like, no, we want to see the Paladins. I was like, oh, okay.
So let them write fan fiction about how they found Sendak's pod somewhere. Sure. And he's been living in a yurt on an ice planet. I don't know.
It was like an episode that they were gone. Were they gone from the previous episode? And then by the end of the following episode, they were like, hey, look who we showed up with. Is that what it was?
Yeah. I can't remember how much time passed. Like, but yeah, they kind of went out. They had their mission and they came
Hagar
back
had the tracker.
With Sendak.
He's just teaching himself to crochet.
Yeah.
I guess.
And he grew a mullet. He did.
He got a little more rugged. He actually, I think.
He's pulling off the
Keith
look.
He looked cooler. Like. I remember we had some questionable Sendak drawings from like the beginning of the series where we were just like, oh, he looks a little strange. But by the time we got to this end Sendak, like he was looking good.
And especially any time Ryu drew him in the storyboard, Ryu's Sendaks are the best.
Yeah.
If we don't get fan art of mullet Sendak by the time this show is done, I will be very disappointed.
Yeah. Okay, but is that a mullet or a mane?
Yeah, like, sort of think all about integrated. It.
Kind of going off of that, did you guys get any pushback then when you had not one, but two episodes focusing on that didn't feature the Paladins really at all?
That's the crazy thing. I was fully expecting it. I remember getting the kind of the premise for the general layout of what that episode was going to be, and looking at it and being like, this is jam-packed. And we might have to condense it to one because I don't know if they'll let us have two.
but we
didn't get the pushback.
We got a couple notes that were more about keeping things kind of, what can we do to like keep the pace up?
Yeah, less conference room meetings.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a show that focused two entire episodes on like full-grown adults just kind of having conversations about what they're going to be doing versus, we were stoked.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
I have no idea how you could have cut that down into one episode.
I know.
So much happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Taking notes during those episodes and be like, for most two episode notes, my notes are like 2 pages, maybe. That was 4.5.
Right on.
Like each of those 2 episode chunks had 4.5 pages of notes because so much happened.
I think it's a testament, though, to DreamWorks sort of realizing the audience, what the audience had kind of evolved into and who was really following along for the story and stuff. And so it was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I think there was also a little bit of, like, DreamWorks campaigning so hard for, like, we got to bring Earth back, and what about Earth? And it's all, and we're like, all right, here's Earth. And they're like, well, I guess we asked for this.
Yeah. There was some of that.
I have an email chain that's 300 emails long that just says, what about Earth? In every single email, literally asked for this?
We pushed it off for a little bit. We pushed Earth off for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think that was, our negotiation tactic was like, but Earth's happening, guys.
What's happening on Earth? Conference meetings.
Right.
I mean, they're developing technology, and also there might be an alien attack happening, but no one knows that yet.
Yes. People reacted positively to it. I mean, I think people were appreciative of the fact that you learned more about what happened on Earth, but you also grew to really, really, care for the characters that were there and going through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a very short amount of time, you get really invested in our new little garrison crew.
Our MFE pilots. And Iverson goes from, oh yeah, that guy, to MVP. Like, when did that occur?
Yeah.
He's got a heart of gold.
Yeah, it was
absolutely
like, I think we always had this like special place in our heart for Iverson, even though like in early on in the series he was set up as like that crotchety old guy, the mean teacher that you want to hate,
your drill sergeant.
But you know, ultimately he's like that teacher who's tough love, and we wanted to kind of show that side of him where he's not just like, he doesn't just have it in for anyone. For he, you know, when the chips are down, he cares and he believes in the people who perform.
He reminds me a bit. I mean, one, he called them donkeys, which is based specifically on my junior high gym teacher, Mr. Walters. Really? Yeah. And so I was like already like sort of like dude in love with this guy because he was like, oh, it's Mr. Walters. He's come back. He's with us still. But he also reminded me a bit of Clancy Brown's character from Starship Troopers. I don't know if you guys remember that film. It's a classic.
James Foran in chat literally says Iverson was basically him from Starship Troopers.
Yeah, because he starts off as this like sort of gruff guy that you're like, ah, he's a drill sergeant. And then, you know, he ends up becoming kind of a grunt like in the war, and you realize, oh, he's there for the right reasons.
He's a good officer.
Yeah.
And I mean, we mostly see him facing students, and it is... I spent 6 years working in a high school. It is so hard to discipline kids. Like, they're high schoolers. They think they know everything. Yeah, sure. And you kind of look at our garrison crew and go, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can see having to be hard on a bunch of kids who need to learn military discipline. So
I like the truck in when I think Sonda and Sam are having the argument. We're doing that like slow truck in. He's like, Mama and Dad are having a fight. What do I do?
Mom and Dad, please stop fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's right, but she outranks him.
That's right.
Although I love that you guys brought up Sonda because she's one of my favorite additions this season.
Yes.
Because she's an antagonistic character, but in no way is she ever presented as evil or spiteful in any way. And so I did want to ask, like, what kind of went into the creation of this character?
I mean, I think that was the cool thing about Earth, was that Earth represented, obviously there's a very hopeful sort of optimistic side of Earth that they were space explorers, but then when it comes to, you know, sort of protecting their own, there's that element too, and I don't know where we would fall in terms of like where we would stand if all of a sudden, you know, after Buzz today, it was like, hey, by the way, there's alien invaders here. There's giant lions that are landing. Like, what do I do?
After Buzz TV exclusive. Aliens.
I think the cool thing was to make a complex character that didn't she wasn't a villain. You know, she wasn't.
She's not necessarily reacting in an unrealistic sort of way.
Yeah.
It's. And none of us really know how we're going to react in that situation until you're in it. And when your job is the safety of all these lives, like, she's never seen the lions in action. She has no idea if this is truly what's going to save Earth. She has to go off of, like, the word of protocol. Some people who have kind
a crazy
of, like,
guy, by the way. Like,
comes we're all... back with this crazy technology. Yeah. And, like, it's hard to believe in something you haven't seen.
Yeah. But she comes around.
Yeah.
She seems like she was very much following protocol.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
protocol
pretty much.
Doesn't really have anything in place for this.
Yeah. And when you have that much responsibility on your shoulders, like, taking a risk is that much harder.
Yeah.
An unnecessary risk. And so she tends to default to that protocol of, like, what do you do?
That's it. And when they break rank, I mean, she had to come down on them. You know what I mean? She had to come down on Sam. She was like, all right, we're going to go with your plan, but when this is all over, court martials all the way around the table. Everybody.
And I love the mention of the Joint Chiefs. Like, she's not in charge of literally everything. There's still people that she's reporting to. Mm-hmm. Like,
probably all dead by that
point. I mean, you attack the major population centers, and that's kind of, no more Joint Chiefs.
Yeah.
Yikes. And now I'm flagged.
We also want to shout out to Andrea Romano's hairstyle.
That's right.
Right up in
right up on
Sonda. We were trying to find, like, originally she had this bun, like Sonda.
Yep.
She had like this bun on the back, and we're like, we could find a better hairstyle. Andrea's always, she's always had like this short, but like really cool looking.
It's always like, super stylish and cool. Yeah.
And I'm like, we want to make Sandra
when,
like,
when we had AJ on, he was like, is it just me? Or does she look like Andrea Romano? Like, am I crazy?
We referenced her hair. We actually took a picture of Andrea off the internet and sent it to Christy, our character lead. And we're like, okay, like this kind of hair. Let's go down this. That's right. Make her look real snazzy.
That's amazing.
Why is it that the stuff AJ says on the show keeps getting brought back?
He's very observant, AJ.
Oh, AJ. He's a good guy.
Speaking of, he was able to come back this season as Griffin.
Yeah, we got, you know, they do a whole audition process for any character that has, like, a speaking role that's more than, you know,
two lines.
Galra, corporal number two, that usually falls to Josh. Thank you, Josh.
By the way, if you guys really open your ears, Josh is every character.
So Josh is the Steve Bloom of the show.
Was that subtle hinting about the cloning arc that was happening?
Yes, we cloned Josh's voice.
Of course
voice.
It was. He's every third Galra trooper.
He
went through the process.
AJ, auditioned like everyone else did, and we just listened to all the auditions, and we're like, you know what? Like, we know what AJ can do. He's great. He did amazing for us on LOTOR, and we miss him. So
he's good energy.
So, and we might get some, like, LOTOR ADR while he's in here. Wink, wink.
That also helps.
You know,
we'll just multitask.
A little budgetary needs. So, but yeah, we loved him, and so we're like, you know, let's bring him back if we can. And we could.
He mentioned that he got a welcome to the Voltron family email. I kind of went,
I think sometimes the communication in certain departments maybe isn't
the
as
wires
clear.
Get a little crossed. You know,
I will say our poor casting department, they have so much to deal with. There was some stuff where like things were getting way behind as far as like our characters being cast, and like they're casting so many shows, so I can't blame them for not knowing everything that's going on.
And us too. I mean, you know, there were times where we were so in the weeds in the show itself, and they would put a list of people in front of us for us to listen to, and we would just lose it in an email under like a pile, and then like a week would go by and they'd be like, guys, can you just listen to like one or two of these? And so
yeah. You're like, oh wait, let me just, oh yeah, here it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like the Wild West over there. It's just crazy.
Speaking of the Wild West, we had a 3-year time skip. Is there, was this always the plan? How soon did you know this was going to be the plan?
No.
It was not. I think basically we kind of realized, it does help move the story along if we've got a little bit of time has passed and has allowed things to kind of fall out of line as far as, like, Voltron had made some headway.
Significant,
changes. And then also just giving Sam time to actually have built.
It's the building process. The Atlas is very big.
It's like, how believable is it if he built it in 3 months versus 3 years?
Yeah.
It was really just kind of like logistics. But it was story as well. It helped.
It helps them. They went through it on Earth. I think that was a big part of it, is making sure that they had enough time to be, you know, kept down and live underground and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, for things to really get to that most dire of situations.
Right.
So Earth was the main reason for the time skip then. Did you then have to kind of turn around and go, okay, what happens to literally everyone else?
Well, that's it too. Yeah. I mean, it allows, you know, sort of Galran pirates to start re-inhabiting
the Galra Empire has
fractured.
Yeah, fractured and also created more just friction in the universe. Not everything's as they left it. Like, you get that real glimpse of like what's happened with the rebels and with Matt, where you hear his basically like people are shooting down the door in the room that he's in as he's telling his parents like, I love you, we haven't heard from Voltron, I gotta go.
Yeah.
And so it's like everyone's kind of in this really dire situation, and because basically their savior vanished and nobody knows what happened. And so that's probably not good for morale.
Voltron is basically just power vacuums the show.
Yeah.
There have been like 4 of them in the past 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Getting to remove Zarkon, LOTOR, Hagar, and Voltron from the equation, what was your guys' favorite plot line to explore in that power vacuum?
I'd say Coran falling crotch first on that guy's face.
I mean, if you're going to go for it, you're going to go for it.
I will say, though, the doorbell sound effect that happens when he falls crotch first is like the MVP sound effect of all sound effects.
Kudos to the sound department. Excellent Foley work.
Yeah. Well, I want to, like, I don't want to spoil anything because we have, like, a pretty big exploration of one of those storylines kind of coming up.
Yeah.
Good in the times. Next season.
Can't wait. Ooh, that's going to be fun.
I mean, I think we have our guesses as to which one that is, given how we left off this season.
Sure. Safe to say.
Probably a safe assumption.
So, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah.
One of these things hasn't shown up yet.
One of these things has a lot of hovering questions and a lot of cliffhangers. Like, that guy.
I wasn't even thinking about that because my mind went straight to the serial killer druid just hanging out on his dead planet.
Oh, my God. Yeah, John Wayne Gacy down there going,
you almost kind of forget about that guy. You know, I don't know how... We were fans of the way that episode turned out, but because it's sort of like a side mission, essentially, you know, it loses its thrust and... You know, the bigger picture of the whole season.
Yeah, a lot of that first half gets really overshadowed by how, like, intense the second half of the season was.
I mean, it stuck out to us because that was a full-on horror movie.
Yeah, we went full, like, Mike Myers with it, right?
Oh, my God! The running the knife along the rocks, like,
And that cool, like, teleportation battle. I think that was, that was a cool.
That was really solid. And yeah, getting to see the pirates. And
named Cosmo. Finally!
Yeah!
Cosmo.
Why Cosmo?
I think
Seinfeld?
Because we love we had the BBOB Seinfeld reference.
That's right.
That's true.
That's
right. Definitely caught that.
Yeah. Which like that so as we made our mistake with the Monsters and Mana episode of giving them the design of the treasure room which had like it had like Aladdin's lamp and Cinderella's slipper, and then we put those references on the design sheet and sent it to legal.
They were
like,
no.
But then when like we were about to send the Seinfeld set to legal, and it still had the Seinfeld like references on them, and we're like, take that off, take it off. And then they took it off, and we sent it, and like it went through.
I think we had to change one thing. We had to change one thing. It was like the table colors or something.
Yeah, like we reversed some colors. And then,
but one of them still came through the door like Kramer.
And
like,
the music was, the music was totally something.
The music was great. That one was a lot of fun. And then, Cosmo Kramer. Mm-hmm. And
he's
the dog
cosmic,
being a cosmic wolf.
Yeah, the cosmic wolf.
So it just, made sense. It was fun.
Yeah.
Cosmo is a fan fave, and also everyone in that family has a name that starts with K now.
That's right.
So we really need to know what Keith's dad's name is.
K-pop.
Kevin.
That would be really funny.
Kevin.
Yeah. Or maybe he's like a junior sort of guy. He's like Keith Jr. I don't know.
Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. All right. Who knows? It's all up in the air, really. Anyone can decide. Whatever you fancy.
It's whatever name you want to give him.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Kyle. Yeah, sure.
Plenty of K's. I feel like K, there's just a lot of K's in the Galra, I've noticed. With
that's
Cole
true.
Yep.
And Talk. He had a K at least at the end.
That's true.
Face was the only one that threw it off.
Speaking of the Galra.
It's the best name ever.
Princess Ponies on Twitter said, sent us Sendak mullet fan art.
Wow.
So fast.
She says, I actually have an entire theory about mullets and Voltron and their relation to character development and backstory, and I feel very validated right now. Throw that in the hashtag. I want to read it. The whole thing.
That is a legit... Like Keith style mullet.
Wow.
Oh,
look at that.
Thank you so much, Princess Ponies. You're the best.
Mullets are actually very much tied to that era, that 80s era.
Oh, absolutely.
Of anime, in general.
Yeah. Specifically the anime gen.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, we all know and love Captain Planet. But.
I feel like in shows like Robotech, there were quite a few mullets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone had some
and you
sort
don't
of
question
mullet.
It.
Mm-hmm. And there were at least like in Gatchaman and like a few shows that just had specifically that, like they all had that Keith
haircut
guy. And he was always the leader and he always had that mullet.
We noticed like in Metal Gear. Like, oh, yeah. Snake definitely has a mullet.
Oh, my God, yep.
And we, like, called it out, and we're like, somehow it works. Like, if you saw that guy walking down the street, you'd be like, that's a terrible mullet. But in Metal Gear, you somehow accept it.
I feel like it's all very 80s, and I say this because I watched Escape from New York for the first time this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Did
you see the one-to-one, like, direct comparisons?
No, we definitely watched it in the party setting, so it was a lot of, oh, what's going on? Okay, back to the conversation, which made the double feature of Big Trouble in Little China a lot more confusing. But yeah, the mullet in the action hero is very much an 80s thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We accept.
It sure is.
And I love it, though.
It's one of those things that, like, in my opinion, always reads more acceptable in animation. It can be done in live action on the right person.
Sure.
But in animation, it's just like, that's a good-looking guy with a mullet. And then, like, you translate that literally, and you're like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, the live-action version isn't quite the same.
MacGyver.
I mean, you can do hair stuff in animation that just doesn't happen in real
life.
That's
very true.
Yes.
Very true.
All right. I don't have a good segue for this, but can you hand that piece of paper over, please?
This
one right here. Megan, if you'd be so kind, we have an announcement.
Oh, wow.
Hey, After Bros. Our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From drama, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help After Buzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels. Let us know you did so in the comments and we'll thank you on air. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV Talk.
And speaking of thanking you guys on air, the other thing you can do to support us as a show is to head on over to iTunes, find our podcast format of the show, rate it 5 stars because you need 5 lions for Voltron and otherwise it wouldn't work. Subscribe and leave a comment because that shows our producers that you like this show. It brings us back for our final season at some point in the future. And y'all get a shout out. We are running short on time and we have so much more to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
We needed a 2-hour episode and we just don't have the time for that. So I think right now it's name only. Do we have anything new?
I'm still scrolling.
We have so many reviews. It's so full of love, you guys. You are the best. And as always, if you are not able to leave a review in the English iTunes store, we know there's like 35 of them for all different countries. Screen cap it, throw it in the hashtag, those count, and we still love you.
We have Love You from Katie Holt, 123. Form Blazing Laughter from Mordanis Ironforge. Love this podcast so much by Jenna Juarez, I believe is how you pronounce that. What a Ride by Prodigal 358. Oh my gosh, we got, and that's
you guys are the best.
And they're all very long and very, very sweet. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
We adore you. Thank you, guys. I have to say, every time they call her Katie, I just kind of, it's weird having a name twin in a show.
That's fun. So, the Pulse,
Pitch Holt.
I can't remember what their original name was. It was something before it was Holt, and it was
Gunderson.
Named, no. It was named after, like, Tim's girlfriend's
father. What was it?
I can't remember, but I think, like, he would have had to sign it over.
I think it was the signing
of the waiver.
Yeah, it was the signing of the documents that made him feel uncomfortable.
Nope, not signing my name over. Yeah. And so we ended up changing it to Holt.
Because it was my name, and I cannot have another.
I can't. Katie was always on there. But it was, Holt was a different name.
Oh,
I can't remember
what
it was. It's
like right after the show.
It's completely gone. I have no idea what it was. Also, wanted to just mention, there was a version of the game show episode that had, like, we'd put all of this futz on it that, like, made it really look like old TV.
I mean, it looked like you just pulled a VHS right out of the, you know, the VCR and
let me blow off my Betamax.
Yeah.
And we were so excited about it, and we kind of, like, sent it through the channels, and then, like, the execs came back and, like, this is confusing.
Yeah. They were like,
why
is something
does it look
wrong
so
with
bad?
They're called
filters. Yeah. Instagram has them.
But we're like, it's intentional. It's like the old TV. And they're like, this just looks like there's something wrong with it. And so we're like, okay, all right, we'll pull
I
it
think
back.
Specifically, it was like an intern or somebody had seen her, like an assistant, and they were a little younger, and they were like, something looks wrong here. Like
the generations that broken? Didn't have antenna.
That didn't have tracking, yeah. didn't
so,
have...
So did you guys
so your
change,
target audience.
Did you guys change the aspect ratio by any chance?
No, I would have loved to be like awesome. The black part. But no, it was... We left some of the... There's some little glitches in there, which are kind of fun. But, like, there was a bigger... Like, there was ghosting. Like, it was kind of double image. You know, you get the antenna just right where it's coming through, but you can still see, like, two of every camera.
Yeah. And it would get worse over time. It'd go then come back.
Like, some of those, like, rainbow bars that are just slowly, like...
migrating up to TV. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, again, shout out to the sound design crew, because every time it did, there was that visual distortion. The sound was just phenomenal.
Yeah. We were like, did the sound just did the audio? Nice.
Yeah, we've got an episode coming up that, like, I think is the crowning achievement for our sound department.
Yes.
Like, you'll know it when you see it, but, like, we're all super stoked about it.
Yeah.
We are definitely looking forward to the next season.
Absolutely.
But before we get into predictions, because we're actually going to have a couple minutes for predictions at the end of it. Like, we can make predictions. But that's not going to be till the end of things. I want to talk about.
You got pulled right there.
I have a head cold, and I'm amazed that I've made it this far.
We're doing very well.
The fog cloud is real, y'all. I want to talk about character development. We get so much for Hunk this season. Yeah. Oh my god, I was hugging pillows and screaming for most of it. It was so great.
Yeah, Tyler, like, he literally made me cry in that episode when we were doing the record for, and he has that whole run about you know, wanting to see his family and he can't see it.
And it was longer originally. It ran on a little longer. It had, like, more sentences.
That tends to be what running longer
is. More words.
Yes.
But
maybe
yeah.
another paragraph?
Like, I was
maybe a comma
up.
Or two. I don't know.
It's like, he's just such a friggin' amazing actor. And, it like, he's so good at comedy that, like, I think...
You lose sight of that when especially when he's playing a character like Hunk. Like, in live action, you can see, you know, he's an awesome actor. But when he gets into Hunk mode, you just sort of lose sight of all that. And when he brought it out, we were
just like, ooh. But, yeah, he's amazing. Tyler is amazing.
Between that and Bex doing Pidge when she found Matt's grave, we were just like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
A show about magical lions and space rangers doesn't deserve this.
I disagree wholeheartedly. We absolutely deserve this. I feel like every single character in our main seven has made us cry at least once.
Mm.
Like, I feel like we're there. Even Coran, I feel like we're there.
Yeah, he has.
When you're saying bye-bye to the ship.
Yeah.
That was a
sad moment for him. But yeah, Hunk, he had a lot, and it was great. Like, I've always really loved that moment where he's trying to help them when they're drifting in space and everyone's getting at each other's throats. And he's like, guys, like, you're not used to being scared. Like, I deal with this every day. And it was just such a nice, like, explanation of what he is and how much, you know, bravery and courage he has to have to get through that.
Mm.
And because I know that were I in that situation, I wouldn't be nearly so brave.
No.
I would have been, like, broken down friggin' day one. I would have been like, wah!
Yeah, we would have been fetal
space crazy.
Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, they've all had at least a little bit of military discipline, so that helps.
Yeah, sure. They're one up on us for sure.
Hunk was, like, barfing from day one, though.
Yeah, he was.
I'm so glad that y'all dropped that joke.
Come on. We got a couple stomach gurgles.
Well, I personally can't handle, like, continued.
No. I look at it like, it's kind of like the Sailor Moon arc, where she starts really kind of obnoxious. She's, like, the most selfish, the most lazy, the most, like, just, she's always late, she's dumb. Like, she's all of these things. And then ultimately, like, she's complaining about having to be a hero, and ultimately when she gets to that point of being a hero and being selfless, you're like, oh my god, look how far she's come. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whenever you've got a character that you need to, like, bring to this point, you're like, well, let's start him at, like, ground zero. Yeah. And Yo-Hunk is, like, he's getting queasy and he's throwing up, and ultimately, you know, by the end, he's none of those things. He's just eye on the prize, like, I'm a hero, I'm scared, but I go in spite of that.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, he... With all the characters, we sort of run into this problem where we can't service everybody at the same time and, you know, make sure everybody's got their arc. So it was really, really gratifying to finally give him his due, because he was the one that I think, you know, besides Lance, I think he was the one that sort of gets the most, like, when's Hunk going to, you know, get his time in the sun? And we were super stoked to be able to bring it.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead. Of all the characters to be able to connect with him, Keith of all people.
That was so good.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, it was a nice, like, a little callback to the Weblum episode where, you know, Keith, he's kind of practicing those leader skills that are coming out of him, and just relating to Hunk on that personal level, where he's using his cool head to ultimately cool Hunk down and get Hunk to use his cooler head.
He wasn't ready for hugs just yet, though.
Yeah. And we're hugging.
We are hugging.
The only hug you ever get in on Keith is a surprise hug. Allura surprise hugged him.
That's right.
Hunk surprise hugged him.
The whole team hugged him that one time.
Though, I will say, like, one of the proudest moments in hug animation history was that, like, Keith and Crowley hug. Like, it was so, like, I've boarded a lot of hugs in my career, and there's varying degrees of, like, success. The animation you get back, usually it's super awkward, and that one, like, it was so nice.
Yeah.
It was just, like, this very comfortable, I loved it.
It felt real. Yeah. Somebody, I think, at some point asked the question, like, why did Shiro say, like, Keith, we gotta go? What a jerk move. We're like, man, the mission is, like, you know, it's all good to be like, yeah, heartfelt and make sure you have your moment with your mom. But Shiro's all about the mission.
Shiro's also very good at, all right, emotional turmoil occurred. let's move on.
Yeah. We've talked
He's
a little
good
bit
at that.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit this season about him compartmentalizing a lot of things.
We've talked a lot about him compartmentalizing.
I mean,
I'm a little biased. I may have a favorite, so we talk about him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the most training of any of our paladins, so he knows that there's a time to grieve.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if there's something extremely pressing, like as pressing as, you know, the Earth is,
right,
has been invaded, you don't get as much time as you might like.
Yeah.
To take that
time. Yeah. And it's not like he was looking at his watch. He said it with, like, wait. So Josh delivered that line. You know, I think Shiro realized how heavy that information was being sort of disseminated by everybody. But, you know, I think from day one, when he gave that speech to Pidge when they were on the Galra ship, and he said, like, you got to make some hard decisions in war. Mm-hmm. Like, he hasn't really deviated from that, clone and all.
Yeah.
Well, because he knows. Like, especially at the beginning, more than any of them, like, he gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, he's been doing it time and time again. And it speaks to his character that he has the strength to put his own, like, personal feelings aside and move forward. And care about, I guess, the state of the world and the state of his loved ones enough to do what needs to be done,
in spite
of how he might be feeling.
Yeah.
And I love that what we learned about him this season reframes everything else that we've seen. We learned that he had this degenerative disease that I've seen people liken to ALS. If that was your...
I think it's in there. You know, it's something that we knew was going to progress over time, or he knew it was going to progress over time. So we didn't want to call it out as anything specific.
Yeah.
But I think that was the idea.
Mm-hmm. So Shiro's been walking with the specter of his own death behind him for years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that just reframes everything that we see about him. And especially the, if I don't make it out of here, I want you to leave Voltron. Like,
stop.
He's been doing the, if I don't make it out of here thing for years. Like, he's known.
And with the first episode of the season, us finding out that Keith is one of the few people that knows about this, it reframes their relationship as well. So, yeah, when he says, you know, when you're leading Voltron one day, it has a completely different context to it. Because, yeah, they both know that time is of the essence. You guys are so mean.
We're all just sitting here all heartbroken all over again.
I think it's also tough because, you know, early on he was the adult amongst teenagers.
So
he has to kind of shoulder the burden of just living life, more life than the others. He's got perspective on things. Even if we didn't give him, you know, the degenerative disease, even if we didn't give him like a backstory where he had a significant other that he sort of chose mission over love, you know, all those things. I mean, they inform his character, but I think he's just been around longer than they have, so he sort of has
more perspective.
Sorry.
There's a different view on life.
Okay.
But, I mean, as sad as we are about all of the revelations that we get with him this season, you know, what he had to go through in terms of the disease and in terms of, you know, recovering, you know, having to come to terms with the fact that he's living in an evil clone body now.
Right.
And the fact that he's not, he's a paladin, but, like, his function on the team has changed and evolved, and then they come back to Earth, and you know, he and Adam had parted ways, but coming back to find that Adam is gone now, like, those are all a lot of heavy things to deal with, and it kind of culminates at the end of the season with him getting this triumphant moment of being back in the leadership position.
Yeah.
And getting this wonderful emotional payoff with him basically being in charge of the Atlas. And that was just, it was really good.
Battlefield promotions.
I mean, that was the thing, you know, we sort of, obviously, you know, we saw that there was a huge kind of emotional pushback, and justifiably so, you know, by Adam, you know, being killed off in the war. You know, while we're sympathetic to that, we wanted to make sure that Shiro was a character that sort of always rises above. You know, he always, you know, those are all hardships, but he always comes out on top. So from a very, very sort of superficial place, this is not like a Band-Aid in any way. I kept saying, like, in my head, like, he is a giant sort of battleship mech captain that punches planets now. Like... I know that's not going to like heal anybody's wounds, but it is awesome. You know what I mean? And his position sort of evolves. I don't want to say past Voltron, because obviously Voltron's the centerpiece of the whole show, but he's had probably the greatest evolution of all the characters. You know, when you look at it, when sort of take a step back and look at everything.
I really always loved that moment of them kind of coming to the realization, or just handing the mantle of captain over to him, just almost, you know, without question.
Yeah.
Everyone knew except him that, like, that was going to be his role, even though he'd already kind of had been doing it.
He was
so
doing
long.
It without even realizing. You know what I mean? He was sort of leading everybody and was like.
But yeah, it was just, we knew that Keith was going to move into the Black Line and be the Paladin of the Black Line, but we knew that we were never going to sideline Shiro. It was just a matter of when he got his moment.
Yeah.
We obviously knew we were going to be bringing this gigantic, like, SDF-1, essentially, into the show, and Shiro was going to be our guy. But it was just, you know, it kind of gave us that warm, fuzzy feeling of here's this character that we love. He's evolved to a different role, but he's still in the fight. And,
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, you know, because this was something that sort of got batted around internally at DreamWorks when we were pitching the idea of the Atlas and all that stuff. You know, some execs were like, and again, totally justifiable, like, guys, the show's called Voltron. Like, Voltron's got to be front and center. We're like, there's got to be this thing for Shiro that's almost bigger than Voltron, bigger than, you know, I don't know, like the theme of the show, bigger. The theme is about, you know, sort of evolving and continuing forward and persevering. Mm-hmm. So you know, the Atlas kind of embodies that. Even the fact that it's just called the Atlas, he's carrying the weight of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Voltron's the defender of the galaxy. Earth needs
its own defender. Yeah, sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I remember originally some of the execs being like concerned because the Atlas was going to be bigger than Voltron.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big thing.
But it can't like dwarf Voltron, or like it's what makes Voltron important isn't its size. Right. It's what it's capable of. And like the Atlas, like as awesome as it is, it's still like Earth technology. So it's like they still have that to deal with. And then like just that really awesome moment of that Altaian, like
the other
crystal,
robot,
the castle ship, and combined with like Shiro's arm and all of that
coming together
into this Earth technology to make this other robot. It was, you know, it's all of that crazy magic space stuff that we can't explain it.
And also just Shiro's will, kind of like willing it to happen, you know, like he had that sort of inherent sort of quintessence, paladin mojo. I think if anybody else was in that position, it would not have happened.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the crystal in his arm wired into his brain. And then just all the pieces that were so masterfully put together that you don't notice the first time you're watching because you're too busy going, oh my God, another giant bot! But then on second watch, it's like, okay.
It's all going somewhere.
Yeah.
I just love that, like, going back to Shira, that, like, you shouldn't be afraid of moving on. Because when you move on, you can move on to something completely and entirely new.
Yeah.
And just as important.
Totally.
Yeah. And it's really just a lesson in life. It's something that, like, even we dealt with moving from, like, storyboarding to directing and directing to producing. It's like you're letting go of a certain amount of, like, the art. Because we started as story artists where we're drawing the characters all day. And then you move to directing and you're letting go of a little of that control. You're not seeing, like, your sections on screen.
Right.
But you're molding, like, the shape of the episode more. And then you move on to producing. And you're not necessarily seeing, you know, your drawings on screen. But you're kind of guiding the ship. And it's a different role. And it definitely takes an adjustment period. But, like, they're all rewarding in different ways, and you know, moving on is okay.
It's good. Yeah,
it's literally part of life, and you're gonna go through phases in life. And Shiro essentially moved on from the Black Lion, but went on to lead the entirety of the Earth Force.
Right. We, I mean, our other sort of internal discussion, our pushback for them when they were like, it's gonna be bigger than Voltron. I was like, hey, when I was a kid, I aspired to fly the Tomcats and not the aircraft carrier they landed on. Like, the kids are still going to like Voltron, okay? They're still going to like the Lions, I promise you.
Yeah.
So that's the other side of it, too. You know, for anybody that was, like, worried that, like, oh, Voltron won't be as special. Like, he's still awesome. Or it's still awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now we just have still awesome. More giant robots.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just more awesome to go around.
Yeah. And I want to end on that really great metaphor about careers because we are, we're running out of time, sadly. Although we do want to take some time for some really quick predictions. Oh, I thought we were going to get the quick one.
Whoa.
Love when we get the fancy light show.
I love the light show. Yeah. We don't get to do this very much anymore on our shows because they're all Netflix or they're all a week ahead. Yeah, we have that wonderful, horrifying robot in that last episode that, again, I dubbed it something in my notes that isn't air appropriate. So I can't say.
Because it was just so terrifying.
Oh. Yeah, let's go with that. that's what the F stands for. I really do think that Lotor is going to come back as a Robeast.
That would
like,
be fantastic.
That is kind of what I put a pin in here, because we're still in No Body, No Death. We still have Hagar out there doing whatever the heck she wants. I think she found the colony of Altaians and is using them as batteries, which is horrifying and also in the family line. And I really do think that at some point she's going to find Lotor and be like, well, he's lost his mind, but we can use this.
Love the idea of her just ending up on the same planet that Sendak was on and just crocheting.
There you go.
Well, I was going with legit predictions, but okay. We're continuing in the Eat, Pray, Love tour. We send off our murder robots, and then we crochet scarves. So the batteries don't get cold.
She's just trying to find herself. She's a single lady now. Yeah.
She's taking the evolution theme and just moving on to the next phase of her life.
Absolutely.
She's got a vision board up.
Direct murder instead of indirect.
I tried to poke her face this whole time. It didn't work out.
That's why I was looking at Megan and not at you guys, because it's harder when you're at the table to avoid eye contact.
Yeah.
But, whatever this show has in store, I look forward to seeing, what role Atlas plays in future stuff. What I really love, it was like one of the final shots of the season was seeing Earth being a hub for like
interstellar activity.
Yes, exactly. And I love the idea of seeing Earth evolve and grow and becoming the center of the Voltron Coalition. That's what I kind of hope to see in the next season.
So, I just want to see him get a drink at Vrepit's house.
Yes! I want to see him, his interstellar franchise.
Yes! Franchising.
If season 8 was just, it turned into a reality TV show about, like, basically, like, the kitchen nightmares, but, like, on different planets with Vrepit's house.
Vrepit's house.
I would totally be fine with that.
God. It's a good idea.
It's not Hell's Kitchen, it's Hunk's Kitchen.
But he'd be like the nice version of Gordon Ramsay that works with the kids on MasterChef Junior and not the one that throws plates.
It is weird that he can inhabit both those places. When he's talking with the kids, you're like, oh, he's like a sweet guy.
Well, evidently, American TV really turns up the anger. Like, that's what Americans want to see. And that's why American Hell's Kitchen and British Hell's Kitchen are so different.
Two different
anyway.
Let's do a Hell's Kitchen podcast. Let's go.
I mean, there actually is one on AfterBuzz, so we're kind of stepping on toes there.
If you ever need someone to join
in. Well, put in the good word for you.
Put you in contact with the host.
Do you guys have any final thoughts on just season 7 as a whole?
I mean, we're excited that it's out there. We're super excited that it queues up our final season. It has been a really, really long ride for us.
Mm-hmm.
There was obviously a ton of emotions and sort of people weighing in on what their positions were as to how, season 7 shook out. And we really, really, want to reiterate what you guys said. Like, everybody's opinion is valid. Everybody, mm-hmm. Who doesn't come with, like, crazy eyes, has they deserve to have their opinions, heard. And
we hear you. You deserve to be heard. Your opinions are valid, as everyone has said.
Yeah.
We sympathize and empathize with you. We certainly never wanted this show to be something that hurt people in any way other than, the heartstrings.
Other than, like, the good hurt.
Yeah.
The intentional heartstrings.
Yeah. But it happened and it wasn't something that we wanted, but it's obviously also not something that we can change. It's out there.
Yeah.
But
end of the day, we're super, super proud of everybody's hard work. And I think the show, it's gone 78, by the end, when it's all said and done, it'll be 78 episodes, which is, like, unprecedented for a show.
That is a lot.
Like this. It's a lot of episodes. And everybody just poured their heart into it. And the fan base, which is crazy passionate, we just appreciate them so much.
Mm-hmm.
We really, really do.
And, I mean, you guys have hit 8 seasons in a movie, the movie being the pilot.
Yeah, right? Crazy.
It's pretty
That's
nuts.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we do have to wrap it up, sadly, so we will see you guys whenever season 8 drops, I guess. And for everyone asking in the chat, no, we don't know. But New York Comic Con is this weekend, and there may or may not be an announcement. We don't know that either, so stay tuned. I'm sure they'll stream the panel.
I honestly don't know that either. I have no idea. Are we announcing? I have no idea. But maybe we will. Yeah. We'll all find out in the next couple of days.
They're just going to throw us up on stage and then we go like, huh? Like,
here's this. Here's your tip sheet.
Yeah. What? You'll find out as the PowerPoint is going.
Yeah. Right. You're just reading off the PowerPoint like a nervous sixth grader. And now you know how I do these shows. Thank thank you guys so much.
Thank
Where
you.
Can the people find you if they want to keep up with you?
Yeah, same place as we've always been. I think the best Lauren Montgomery on Instagram and Art of Lauren M on Twitter.
JDS_77 somewhere and the other one somewhere else.
I'm pretty sure it's in the lower third.
Yeah,
so. It probably cool. is. Yeah.
Shout out to our iTunes listeners.
Well, thanks again, you guys.
Thank you. And we appreciate you guys, too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We do our best.
I feel like we should do one of these purely on the game show episode because we could talk at length on it.
That's right.
Let's talk. All right, Megan, where can the people find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
You can find Blue Lion Alexis at ATORS890, Yellow Lion Mark at MarkBDonica, and Red Lion Emma at Emma Fife. I am Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is KIAXET. Thank you guys again for joining us. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next season.
Bye. Our founder, Kevin Undergaro,
remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, the views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.